Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to another Empire Podcast interview special. Few actors are as synonymous with a single role in their careers as Anthony Daniels. From the moment he appeared in what was then known just as Star Wars in 1977, encased within golden armor and hidden by a slightly altered voice, his life and career has been dominated by one character, C-3PO, the ultimate protocol droid, fluent in over 6 million forms of communication. You know the one. Daniels is unique within Star Wars in being the only performer to appear in all 9 films in what is now known as the Skywalker Saga. If I'm wrong about that, by the way, do write in and tell me. And now he's taken over 40 years of memories and experiences and funneled them all into a book called simply I Am C-3PO, The Inside Story. And he came into the pod booth recently to have a good old natter with me about his decision to write it now and various aspects of the Star Wars experience. Now, as you'll hear, I had only received a copy of the book just a couple of hours before he arrived in our studio, so I didn't have time to read it, for which he constantly and good-naturedly busted my balls. But hopefully my ignorance resulted in an interesting conversation. You be the judge. And yes, we do touch upon his experiences shooting The Rise of Skywalker, but in case you haven't yet seen the final movie in the Skywalker saga, fear not, no spoilers lurk within. So, here it is, 45 minutes or so of a man that J.J. Abrams, no less, has described as gloriously witty, keen, and spirited. But after me, you'll hear the voice of Anthony Daniels.
As you can see, I have no questions written down, so this is a conversation.
I really like that. Go.
This will be a conversation.
Action.
All right, here we go. I've never had that before. That's interesting. We're delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by Anthony Daniels, Mr. C-3PO himself, who has a book out, I Am C-3PO, The Inside Story. I like that.
Is that a pun?
How would you describe the title?
Not my own, because when I was thinking what to call a book about my life around C-3PO and Star Wars, I wrote down a list of the man with the golden face, the man behind the golden face, the golden mask, inside out, whatever. And eventually I came across, it just came to me, an inspiration. Yes. The Force truly was with me. Yes. I just came up with a line, telling the odds, as in 3PO finally saying, sod you, I'm going to say it the way it is. Of course, the publishers went, what? What do you mean? And I said, well, there's a passage in one of the films where 3PO says the odds of successfully navigating an asteroid field are approximately 3,720-1, at which point Harrison Ford said, never tell me the odds. Yep. And so I thought, telling the odds would be neat. And they went, nobody will understand that.
Oh, I beg to differ.
Well, because you know about Star Wars. Yep. To be fair, the book is a lot about Star Wars, but it really is, I realize, a story of my life during these years. And many people have stories about their lives, whatever their passage through life is, they have their own story. And this is a story based around the movies and the silly and the sad things that happen around them. But it is a moving forward, a moving journey that has a structure. It's ups and downs, it's bumps in the roads, it's heights, it's lows. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's kind of a general interest to somebody who may have peripherally observed Star Wars from a distance. After 40 years, there's very few people on the planet who haven't been touched by this. So it's not specifically for Star Wars fans. There's a few inside comments that, Uber fans will appreciate, I hope. But it is for everybody. And I will say at this point, I was amused on Twitter that somebody who's read it said, I'd give it PG-13. It's not really for kids.
Okay.
But there's nothing rude. There's no expletive. All the expletives have been taken out because it's not a sensational book. Yes. But hopefully it's a fun read.
Absolutely. And as you know, I've only just received a copy this morning, so I will read it. I'm looking very much forward to delving into it. But I was fascinated just flicking through it by your approach to telling your story in that lots of short chapters, Anthony. And I think that's a good thing. Anyway, so many celebrity books and autobiographies get bogged down in the small details, and this moves at a real pace.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you for noticing that. And I thought about this deliberately. Some chapters are one page long. Some are like 5 pages long. But even the concept of chapters, I didn't want to have chapters. I didn't want to interrupt my flow of storytelling.
Yes, of course.
Wait a minute. What's that line? I'm not very good at telling stories. Well, not at making them interesting anyway. You remember that?
I do, indeed.
Well,
yes.
It suddenly occurs to me, should have occurred earlier, shouldn't it? that I am telling stories here. And yes. Some stories are shorter than others. Some are more emotional than others, whatever. But it is a flow of consciousness, if you will. Mm-hmm. So designing the book, I really thought about it, and I eventually realized people want chapters. You need a slight bus stop to say, well, I'll just stop here for a minute, but I'll carry on. But I insisted that the chapter titles are in a light mid-gray as I look at it. Mm. Sound effect of me, of Anthony. You know, my first job was on radio, and sound effects are very important.
Absolutely.
The chapter headings are in light gray, so they don't interrupt you reading the black typeface. If you want to go on, you just casually look at the one word chapter headings, which are fairly oblique, so you can flow at your leisure. And eventually, I'm rather annoyed to see that by mistake the page numbers have been printed black. If we do a paperback, okay, that will be corrected.
I'm sure you'll do a paperback. This thing will fly off the shelves, won't it?
I have no idea. I don't know why I wrote it, really. It seemed the right moment to do so because of, you know, we got the 9 films, but we can come back to that. But I did think how to do this, and I wrote it in, I had lots of sections open, and I thought, yes, oh, I could tell people about that. Oh, I remember that. And then I would go and fill in bits here, a bit like a crossword puzzle.
Yes, yes.
You know, I know the answer now to that. And life doesn't always give you stories in rounded, encapsulated form. So you do have to find a literary way of making a satisfying conclusion, a bit like a punchline in a joke, okay?
Mm, yeah, of course.
So that you feel, ah, yes, that's a neat little package there, and that's another package there. And then I realized that with all the, 11 movies, the three trilogies and the two sideways movies, that became a kind of coach rack to hang various other stories on, because it's not all about shooting in the films and so on. There are other topics, as you will find, you know, talking about John Williams' music, you know, magic, talking about, obviously, meeting George, talking about the fans and their huge importance to the whole project, and talking about the R2-D2's Builders Club, an extension of the fan base, but how wonderful that they become a part of it.
That's been amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and talking about people who forge, you know, the stories of people who collect signatures and autographs, and the forgers who just rip people off. There's a variety of all sorts of side issues, going to the Academy Awards. Wow, that's a story. Not that I was giving, I wasn't receiving, obviously. Yes. I was looking for a way of hanging these things on a thing. And then, of course, as I'd finished them, I began to think, well, which bit goes there? Because some things are out of sequence, and I've tried to make it so you don't suddenly get a hiccuping jump.
Just to go back to the idea of why now? You said it was because, you know, it's partially to do with the fact that the 9 films are coming to an end, and I presume that your time as 3PO is also coming to an end. Never say never, though, Sean Connery once said.
Well, remember that I have said goodbye 3 times now. You know, I said goodbye after, what was it, Return of the Jedi, bye-bye Ewoks and everybody else, and then, you know, bye-bye at the end of the Revenge of the Sith, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now, really rather a sad goodbye, because it is goodbye, goodbye, goodbye at the end of the Rise of Skywalker, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So now is the time, though. This is why you decided to write this book now.
The reason I wrote it now was that about a year ago, slightly more than that, somebody came to me and said, would you write a book about your memoirs? And I thought, well, the suggested 40,000 words seemed kind of doable. I'm sure I could do it. I think I ended up about 95,000 words. So it's a kind of book-shaped book, which is quite impressive. I never, ever thought to write a book I never thought to
That's
be on a TV program that said, so I understand you've written a book. Funny you should say that. Here it is, you know.
The book is I am C-3PO. Yes, the author is. All that sort of stuff.
You know, it makes me wince and now I'm a part of it. But I had written long time ago, I think in the interregnum between the first three films and the last one, the first prequels, I'd filled in some of that time by writing as a quasi-memories, memoirs,
okay,
which probably is French for memory. I don't know.
Probably is.
God, I'm international. Well, 6 million forms of communication.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Although, as you say in the foreword, English is the only language you speak.
Oh, you've read the foreword.
I read the foreword and the first few chapters, Anthony. I did what time allowed. Oh,
that's terrific. I used to write the Wonder column for the Insider magazine, Star Wars magazine, hosted by Dan Madsen, who used to run the fan club. And I used to tease my brain into making the vignettes of stories on the set into silly, written in a very silly, funny style. And I used to get fan mail that just said that people really liked it, you know. Yeah. And then I ran out of nice things to say, so I stopped doing it. But it's a bit like being being on Twitter, having 150, whatever you call them, keystrokes, to say something like a haiku. It's a real discipline. It's a bit of a brain puzzle. I mean, I'm no good at these things. I can't do Sudokus or anything like that. But my branch of a Sudoku is to write stuff, if you will. Okay. And I have tried to write in a way that is not just linear. Then I did this, then I did that, then I did that, then I did... Oh, God. So I write in a kind of elliptical way where sometimes I ask the reader, just hang on with me. You don't know what I'm talking about yet because the subject is going to be a page later.
Yes.
And you go, oh, I guess that's what he was talking about. Or, oh, I didn't understand he was talking about that. I mean, it's up to you, you know. But I expect the reader to do a small amount of work.
Absolutely. And the fact that, you know, that you wrote it yourself, and there's no ghostwriter involved here.
I don't understand. Call me stupid, but I don't understand how ghostwriting works. Because how could you... Well, I just don't understand. So, yes, I wrote it all. And there are bits that, I would love to revisit. But, you know, maybe there'll be a special edition like George did with the movies. But I don't think so. I write in a particular style, which some people have called lean. I don't over elaborate too much. And, you know, I expect you to picture what I've said, and I don't need to say it in words on the page, because otherwise it would become, you know, family Bible sized. What I quite like is, and I had to struggle a bit, was to explain things in words that are quite complicated. And it comes to mind, there's one passage where I explain about George tricking out the lightsaber, the original lightsabers, were actually a visual lighting effect done with spotlights and half silvered mirrors shooting up and down the camera off the blade. And I did have to really think that one through so that hopefully the reader can follow the science of it, if you will.
Yes, yes.
And then there's a passage where I talk about Maxi working out how to fit 3PO's leg up and around my ankle and shin and thigh, which is full of angles and reverses and whatevers. Yeah. And finally, it's on. And that took a bit of working out to make sure you, the reader, can get the picture.
Yes, but I love the fact that it is you. That you wrote this yourself, you get a sense of your personality in the words.
Thank you. And what I thought I'd done until I came to do the audiobook, which will be out sometime later. I thought I'd written as I speak because some sentences are one word long. I mean, you know, I think I got A-level English, but I wouldn't have done if I'd written like that, would I? And some sentences begin with an and, or even worse, a but.
The English language is a movable feast, in
so,
my opinion.
So it is in this case, yeah. I did actually take against the semicolon.
Oh, really? Why?
Well, I don't know. I just thought it looked a bit clinical on the page. But then, of course, I use a lot of dashes.
Yes.
Because I speak in dashes. Most people do.
Yeah.
And then I looked at all these dashes and it began to look like the Morse code for him and say. So I did put back one or two semicolons. I mean, you know, to any semicolons that are listening, I'm sorry. I come back. I'm sorry. I won't do it again.
Waging war in the semicolon, Anthony. Honestly, what's going on? Ridiculous. So you were approached about this about a year ago. So you were presumably filming The Rise of Skywalker at the same time as writing this.
I think it's more than a year ago. I slightly forget now. Mm-hmm. But in the passage of time between then and now, I had the opportunity to think a great deal and to do all this basic memory searching. I only once or twice went to some kind of book or authority to think, what year was that? And occasionally I was totally wrong in the sequence of things. But what happened then was a lot of traveling, both for pleasure and for business, for mm-hmm. work, on trains, on Eurostar, that kind of thing. And then, of course, as we reach the Rise of Skywalker at Pinewood mm-hmm. Studios and elsewhere, hours and hours of sitting around on the set, hours. You know, filming is huge fun, but part of the exhaustion of it is yes. just sitting there, having another coffee, having another cookie from Kraft, because the food on the set is wow. Reading another newspaper, having a snooze, trying to do a Sudoku. And I was very lucky that on my laptop I could sit uh-huh. with nothing better to do. And also later on, of course, I could write contemporaneously yes. as we were shooting yes. what I was talking about. Because I will say that when you see the book, obviously towards the end I come into talking about The Rise of Skywalker, but not in a spoiler way, because I so despair. Anybody who's listening to this broadcast, if you are a spoiler, really, do you have to? Does it make you feel good? Please don't, because I don't want to spoil anything for anybody.
Of course
not. So I wrote it in a very roundabout way, and I showed JJ what I'd done. He said, oh, it's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. That's okay. You don't give away the ending of the film. Yeah. It's totally fine. Although, I have to say, when it comes to Star Wars spoilers, Anthony, do you know the story of what happened around The Phantom Menace pre-release?
No.
This is incredible. So obviously, there was a blanket of security thrown over that film, and no details were released apart from what we saw in the trailers. And lots of speculation about what might happen to various characters. But you couldn't find out any spoilers about that movie at all. Until a month before the movie came out, when the soundtrack album was released. And on the soundtrack album, two track titles, Qui-Gon's Noble End, followed swiftly by Qui-Gon's Funeral. So
That is called self-spoiling, auto-spoiling. And it's like in episode 7 with the notorious red arm.
Yes.
Read about it in the book. It came out very early because I think it was a South American, it may have been a Mexican drinking glass manufacturer had printed characters from the next movie on the glasses in colour, and lo, there was one of 3PO with a red arm. So immediately people are like, you know, red arm. And just recently, of course, on this latest film, there was some other product. Well, I think it's the toy, the miniature toy comes yes. out, and there is 3PO, or it may have been a poster, with carrying the bowcaster and staff from yep. Chewie. So suddenly, yeah, all the stories of 3PO becoming hero are spoiled, you know? But again, that was a shot, you know, an own goal.
Yes,
it?
Yeah. I do love those things where people, it is like a blanket. You try and throw it over the entire production, but it doesn't have quite enough material to cover the entire production. Yeah. Things will always sneak out.
Yeah. Yeah. From all sorts of strange directions. And one thing that really kind of kills me is when they publish the novelization of the film before the film comes out. And I've sort of said, why do you do this? Well, people, you know, go to see the movie more than once when they already know the story. They've seen it before. Because yes. we all like being retold the same story, really.
Yes.
But there are so many things I don't. I'm just an actor. I yes. just say, I'm told where to stand. I'm told what to say. I'm told when to say it. You know, actors are pretty stupid, really.
And from the beginning, George told you how to say it faster, more intense. Or did he ever give you that direction?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, not intense, you know.
Because 3PO doesn't do intense.
Oh, he does. He does nothing but intense. No, I have been telling the story recently on the set of Rise of Skywalker, or Tross, as we call it, TROS. It sounds so ugly, doesn't it, Tross?
Star Wars Tross, no. Rise of Skywalker for me.
Star Wars Trust is something else, something they haven't yet manufactured as merchandise.
That's very, very true.
I said it first. But there was a scene, which you will see in the movie, with, I remember Oscar was there, and John Boyega in the middle, and Daisy, actually, they were there, outside. And they were, you know, talking very sincerely and really seriously about this thing that they needed to do. And I was part of the conversation, so I'm not in the suit in rehearsal here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, John is saying this, and Daisy is saying this, and suddenly 3PO comes in like that. And I thought, with our four faces visible, I thought, God, I'm on another planet, aren't I? But that's 3PO.
That's what it is.
And it works, you know, as a pantomime character in amongst all this reality. Wow.
Yeah.
It does work.
And that's all because of choices you made as an actor over 40 years ago. It's astounding.
Yeah, and we're stuck with it. I'm sorry.
You're stuck with it. Sorry, George.
We have been stuck with it. And the voice is actually quite hard to do because he is very tense, and that's up in the throat. And if I'm doing that for a day of looping or dubbing or ADR or indeed audio recording, eventually, you know, and I am tight around the diaphragm and the butt and everything.
Oh.
R2-D2, what are you doing here?
Do you speak fire alarm, Anthony?
I do now.
What were they saying?
He was saying, possibly somebody from the publishing company has arrived 30 minutes late.
We shall redouble our efforts. Yes, I mean, these are choices that you made as an actor for years.
Yeah, and, you know, people may wonder about that, but there is this thesis. If you have 5-10 actors and you give them the same page of dialogue or whatever, they will come up, without instruction, they will come up with their own interpretation. And one of the reasons you would hire an actor that you know is that you kind of know they will come up with something you will like and admire and want to use. In George's case, he had no idea about me and didn't really expect what I gave. And then the remarkable thing happened that he assumed, because he loves working in post-production, that he could just change the vocal part of it for something that was more attuned to his ear. And then really a curious piece of space magic that happened, that 3PO had eventually, it seemed, through forces beyond my control. I mean, seriously, I don't kind of know how it happened. Because I basically was winging it, wasn't I? I was out in the desert wearing this clutter for the first time. Yeah. And after 6 months kind of study, getting in my system, he came out of the end. It was like putting everything I'd got into a blender and eventually pushing the button.
Wow.
And then pouring the strange liquid out. And there we had this figure. So I would like to take the whole thing to myself, and I cannot explain some of it. I'd never been in a film before, so, you know, television and particularly stage plays, you get to rehearse stuff, and you do it again, and you work it out, and you do it better and better until you're ready for going on stage. Here, lights, camera, action. Where's the rehearsal? Oh, no, you just get on with it. And so really, to be honest, I was kind of winging it to begin with. And then gradually, the compulsion to make this character, at least in my mind, whole, you know, took over, and I worked really hard at it. The big drama for me was not only dressing up, but the curious thing was, and it still amazes me to this day, that they gave me endless rewrites of the script that I just would stand there reading whilst they fiddled about with bits of my body to make it work as a robot at the studios in fiberglass. Work that sentence out, if you will. that I was reading these scripts where I had these endless dialogues with R2-D2, and it would have the character epithet there, C-3PO, and then R2-D2, C-3PO, R2-D2, C-3PO, R2-D2. You know, like a normal he said, he said, she said, he said, they said. On the day, for the first time in the desert, and it is extraordinary to think about it, I found that, no, there was no sound from R2-D2. There was going to be no prompt, no reply to my question, no answer to my question, no comment. And it was sort of gobsmacking, really. It was like, oh, well, well, how does this work? How are we going to do this?
Could you have heard anything anyway? What was?
Oh yes, I can hear. I can hear pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah. Although when I'm squeaking and making noises in my own head, everything comes up from my ankles in a kind of stethoscope kind of way, you know. So I am making my own Babel Tower in my head, which is horribly disconcerting, but I've got used to it.
Of course.
You know? It's like being in a doing a thing in a big arena where my voice, you know, I've done shows like that. My voice will come back a second and a half later. So I'm thinking, who's talking whilst I'm talking? It's me. It's me. And you have to just work over it.
You have to push through.
But with R2-D2, why had nobody said or nobody planned that I would have some kind of responsive mechanism going on? And I will leap forward several decades to suddenly encountering a character called BB-8, this orange, this kind of football with a hat on. And attached to the football is Brian Herring, dressed in green. But he's not only operating BB-8, he's being BB-8. BB-8, what are you doing here? And he was just hilarious. He's a comedian in every sense of the word, Brian.
Yes.
But he gave me something to react to. Why they didn't do that back in 1976, I don't know. Because it gave me an extra burden, one that I kind of adopted and assumed, but it took several days to get it, that I have to play his part as well as mine. Because not only, you know, I would ask a question, and then there would be a pause, a silence, maybe the wind just going by,
Yes.
And I'm thinking, what's my next line, and what's it said to me to prompt that next line?
Wow.
And it isn't just staring at an object to listen to when you think that's enough of that, I think it's my turn to speak. It's thinking, what is he saying, and what is my physical reaction to what he isn't saying?
Yes.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
You have to listen intelligently.
Yes.
And it took several days for me to kind of get into that mode. And as I say in the book, I would write out what is inferred by my next line.
Yes. But in a strange way, did that inform part of 3PO's personality and part of 3PO's character? Because
it made him pissed off most of the time, because I'm thinking, I'm doing two parts here, you know, somebody help me. And at one point I did ask George to step in, but he wasn't very good at it, so I just got on with it.
That's interesting, because obviously I've seen footage from the set of back in the day of Peter Mayhew as Chewbacca, and there'd be a dialogue scene, and then he will say a line in English in his incredible accent, and it's just the most incongruous sight, seeing an English accent coming out of that body. So it's interesting that you didn't have the same experience as Harrison and Carrie and Mark did.
I know in latter days on The Rise of Skywalker, Brian Herring started speaking in English, because, all right, it's going to be beep, bleep, 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 but, you know, why not just have somebody saying the line to help the actor? And finally, after nine movies, they suddenly think, why don't we just have him talking the words?
Oh. Now all you needed is go back and just reshoot the other films. just for those bits.
I couldn't do it all again. Oh, no.
George has been down that road too many times already, so...
Let's move on.
Let's leave well alone. And your relationship with Star Wars, Anthony, how has that changed over the years? Was there ever a point where you were perhaps tired of your association with Star Wars and tired of hearing about it?
Curiously, one of the early chapters in the book is what happened when the movie opened. Star Wars, the original, the Force, what was it called?
At least the original.
Yeah.
A New Hope.
A New Hope.
Although it wasn't called that for a while.
No, it was called The Star Wars. And before that, The Adventures of Luke Starkiller.
Indeed.
But when the film opened, you know, it had been a bit of a pain to shoot, but when the film opened, it opened a huge reaction from the world. Well, not the world, actually, only America. And it changed the way films are distributed, because people in Europe, England, were pretty ticked off that they had to wait 6 months reading reviews of this extraordinary phenomena before they were allowed to see it. Before they were allowed to the party.
Yeah.
the reasons were the distribution patterns were different. Making prints was expensive and whatever. But 6 months later, yeah, the British and European audiences were allowed to join in. By that point, it had become totally clear to me that I wasn't allowed to be at that party either. Mm. That they, Fox and Lucasfilm, were absolutely dedicated to pretending 3PO was a robot. They never said anything directly, but it was totally clear that I wasn't wanted on the voyage. And it hurt me so much that I actually almost shunned Star Wars. I couldn't bear to talk about it. And I do speak about it in the book. But to be so put away was very, very hurtful. And therefore, I didn't want to think about it. I didn't want to talk about it. Everybody wanted to talk to me, but and I couldn't tell them that I hurt so much. I didn't want to spoil their time. Mm. But it was a very, very difficult time. And it had the effect of distancing me. So when the next film came up, I accepted, really, for two reasons. First of all, it was a job, and I'm a jobbing actor. And secondly, more benign, possibly, I had grown very fond of C-3PO. I felt I was his only real friend on this planet. Yeah. You know, that I was sort of his guardian, his bag carrier, if you will. And so, yes. And from that point, things obviously began to improve, and, you know, with ups and downs and whatever. Mm. But it was only recently, in the last 6, 7, 8 years, that I began, through various circumstances, which I talk about in the book, you know, Star Wars in Concert was a particular breakthrough, not a film.
That's where you start.
Isn't it interesting? Mm. Well, I said that. You have to judge yourself whether it's interesting. That's being rather pretentious in saying, isn't it interesting that the opening lines of the book are not about the films? It's about something that came from the movies, a spin-off, an offshoot, a concert series. But a concert series not just in any local church hall, in gigantic arenas across America, north and south, across Europe, into Japan, where thousands of people a night, thousands of people, 5, 10, 25,000 people in an arena in Houston, all were listening to me telling the story of Star Wars. It was tricked out with beautiful visuals, with a choir, with a huge screen, with a symphony orchestra, 100-piece orchestra, and me telling the story with John Williams. Astounding thing. But what happened was not just telling the story. What happened with all those live bodies, all those faces in the audience, many of which I could see, but all of whom I could sense the energy, the love, the affection, it comes across as absolutely palpable to a stage actor. It is like a force field coming at you. Either the laughter in the funny bits, or the cheers at exciting bits, or the deep silence as people relive that moment that you're storytelling them. Mm. And I would do that for many, many occasions. And I realized that I had never had their experience, that I'd never watched these movies as an objective observer. I'd been in them. I'd been sweating and cursing away inside that gold suit. And suddenly, finally, years later, they are giving me the key to why it's all worked and to why I should make it work for me. Because now they've shown me that they like what we did. They liked what I did. They love what George did, what John Williams did, the other actors, Carrie and Mark and Harrison. They loved all that. But I was the one standing there live, able to appreciate what they had appreciated over the years. That was one of the longest answers you've ever had, wasn't it? That
was a surprised. Chapter.
That was one of the longer chapters of the book.
It was like having the audiobook right here, right in front of me. But that's fascinating, because that all came about as a result of you making your peace with Star Wars those decades earlier, just before Empire Strikes Back, which then manifested itself in a very, I mean, your loyalty to this franchise has been incredible. You have voiced 3PO in animated series. You attend all these other celebrations and all the conventions, and that's an incredible turnaround. How has your life changed simply as a result of being in this incredible series?
It became clear to me some years ago that 3PO was kind of my lot in life, if you will. That, you know, I'd always been a very kind of average actor. I was getting the sort of parts that didn't really matter if I was there or not.
Okay.
As I've said, you know, be a strange silence if I wasn't there. But, you know, the characters were not germane to anything in particular, and not particularly rewarding. And I had lost a certain amount of confidence, curiously, in acting. And it's odd because I don't mind standing on stage as myself, talking to, you know, a loving audience, hopefully. Hopefully loving. but it became clear that 3PO had become my kind of thing to do, my go-to, my is, my why. And how lucky that because of that mind flip that George was able to do so many years before, and the voice I'd created was so located to the body I'd embodied, that all the spin-offs and myriad spin-offs, whether it's audio or visual or physical or practical or whatever, allowed me to have these often very funny and very interesting career moments, jobs, if you will.
Yeah. Has anyone else ever voiced 3PO?
I don't know. I would suspect on occasions they have. But one of the things about employing me, because I still need the work. I mean, I'm a jobbing actor.
Yes.
One of the things you get, I remember we were negotiating for something and they said, well, you know, it's only like one day in the studio. You know, it's one day. And I said, no, it's 40 years and one day.
Yeah.
Because the history of 3PO, the history of Star Wars, and I do believe I'm his sort of guardian. And if you have me on the set, believe me, I'm going to say, no, he actually wouldn't say that. That's not how he would say it. And therefore, the character has remained consistent over the years. And it's because kind of I'm there and I know how he would say something. And I know what he wouldn't say. I mean, I talk about being on the Donny and Marie Osmond show. And, you know, when I looked at the script, I just cut out so many of the lines. I think I ended up with 6 words because it was rubbish. And I didn't have the wit then to rewrite it. Now I just rewrite things and say, look, would it be better if he said this?
Yes.
And they go, oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, of course, because you are C-3PO.
Well, you see the title.
That's right there.
I have the book. Let's do a little... that old trick. So
you couldn't do that with a Kindle, could you, Anthony? You couldn't. Doesn't quite work, does it?
Do you know, I tell the story of reading the script for The Rise of Skywalker. And they gave me this electronic book. Couldn't do it. Now I have the courage to say, look, 3PO, can I offer you this script as an idea? Because it saves time, you know. Because I know how he would repeat something. So it's one of the things that actually keeps me interested.
And how important was it to you to be part of the last three movies?
Coming back to the sequels, the second set of sequels, I have to think about prequels, sequels. There's this strange sort of juggling act in my head.
And technically, the prequels rendered the original films the first set of sequels.
Exactly that.
It's very confusing.
Yes, this is like a school examination. Do you know, it probably is a school examination. Somebody's writing a thesis on this.
Oh, yeah, many people.
A mathematics student is going to
There are
gain,
doctorates in Star Wars.
Yes. And almost because it's become such a global phenomenon and on so many levels, you can see why, because it does trick out the brain a bit. But the prequels had been a mildly uncomfortable experience, as you can read. And it would have been slightly unsatisfying, as I thought, that was the end. They made sense. And as I say in the book, there are people who absolutely adore those movies because they were their first view into Star Wars. And I see that so well because people tell me, no, back in the day I was 10 years old and I loved these characters. I loved what happened. The fact that people who were already 30 years older, who were in their 40s at that point, were going, oh, it's not the Star Wars I know. it's because it's not written for you.
Yeah.
It's written for the new audience. And now, as they've got older, as we've all moved up, actually everybody is appreciating. Mm. And I think that's a terrific thing for George's posterity, if you like, that people really acknowledge that he did it. He did so much. And what I'm kind of wanting to remind people about, because I think they need reminding, George started all this. It's all his fault. Gosh. And he is, you know, when people say, you know, who is the maker? You know, thank the maker. This is going to feel so good. Yes. That's a quote from the first movie, I remember, in a rather dodgy scene in the garage at Elstree Studios.
Oh, yeah? Yeah,
in the oil bath.
Yeah.
He is the maker.
Yes.
Of course, 3PO is referring, not that we knew it at the time, but to Anakin.
Mm.
What a strange beginning there. Because all machines are made, so the maker is the maker,
yes.
Quite simply. But George started it, and maybe the prequels left me feeling a bit bleak, but I thought that was the end, and that was fine. You know, this was not something I had assumed would be a life career. And of course, it has turned out to be a life career. But how magical to go right from the early chapters of this book, right sequentially with side issues through to the last chapters. And I don't just end on The Rise of Skywalker, but The Rise of Skywalker with J.J. Abrams has become such a loving full stop, a wonderful, gentle of satisfaction. And, you know, fate was that always intended? I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows? Thank the maker.
Thank the maker.
Thank the maker. Before I let you go, I do want to ask about one specific moment in recent Star Wars history, which is the read-through for The Force Awakens. Because I'm fascinated by the read-through, mainly because of that very famous picture, the black and white picture of everybody gathered round, ready to read the script for the very first time.
Yeah, it was actually, strange to say, a slightly scary moment, because it had been a while since the previous film, and I had read the script in my private dressing room at the studios and felt a little disappointed that 3PO didn't have much to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose I felt a bit, why am I even bothering with this? And then I go into this huge space. It was in a studio and they'd laid out the furniture. And, I don't know. There was, suddenly it all changed. That sense of tension just died away. Anything in a room with JJ just gets energized beyond belief. I mean, he's almost like one of those battery commercials that, you know, the something bunny commercials that batter away.
The Energizer Bunny.
He is the Energizer Bunny de Nojour. he can just get everybody enthusiastic with his joy. And yes, you can see in that black and, I think it's black and white picture.
It's black and white, yes.
Yeah, I love that because that gives it such a retro feeling. And
it's incredible.
And there were, you know, people that I've enjoyed knowing for so many years. There's Peter over there. Curiously, with his face planted in the script, he who had no words to say was reading the lines. And that's a strange moment. But there was Mark Hamill next to me, who literally had no lines to say in the movie. But boy, can he sight read. The acres of scene description, of stage direction, I mean, really. Obviously, acre is an exaggeration, but
yes.
You get the point. He's an extraordinary reader, and he wove those scenes in everybody's mind. And then, of course, you've got Carrie over there, and from memory, Harrison. And in the rules of anonymity that I've always followed clearly from day one, when I was excised from that original film, the only person, as I say in the book, with his back to the camera, forever unknown, me. I mean, you've got to laugh in a wry fashion.
There it is.
Yeah.
I have the picture up here now, but it seems like a snapshot of an incredible moment. And I've always wondered, this is a really, really strange question, but was it assigned seating?
It was totally assigned seating.
They
knew who the stars were. You know, there's Harrison and JJ over there. Uh-huh. And I'm parked, you know, up in the garage there next to Mark. But of course, it was lovely sitting next to him because we kind of, you know, chatting away there.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Did JJ do a live read, a tape read for The Rise of Skywalker as well?
No, there was The Rise of Skywalker started with me getting rather irritated in my wonderful Ivy restaurant in London. Truly my favourite restaurant that they had chosen, production had chosen, to have not a group read-through, but a group dinner. And so there were so many people from the cast, you know, Daisy and lovely Richard E. Grant.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely superb person.
Yes, yes.
Should have got an Oscar for Can You Ever Forgive Me, but didn't. But
Can we ever forgive them?
No, there are so many things that cannot be forgiven. You know, Trisha Biggar never getting an Oscar for the costume she created in the prequels. That is so unforgivable. I mean, she should
Crazy.
Go, I was going to say posthumously, but that means she'd be dead. But with hindsight,
yes.
You know, the Academy should look back and say, just because you've got issues with George doesn't mean that the films don't contain wonderful, wonderful artifacts and so on. But meanwhile, back in the Ivy, the one person that was missing that should have been there was Chris Terrio, the writer.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because at this point, I had not received a script. And, you know, we were starting 2 or 3 weeks later, and people kept coming up to me saying, I've seen the script, you've got a terrific part. And I'm going, oh, really? Thank you very much. Can I see a script? No, JJ wants you to have the latest, best version. And of course, I would have taken Chris by the neck if he'd been there and said, give me the script, give me, you know, shaking his pockets. But the evening was just superb because, you know, we had all of the main members of the cast, as many as could come along for dinner, all just chatting away and getting relaxed together. So we didn't have a read-through.
Okay.
And it was okay. And we didn't have one for any of the films, because they change now so totally as you're going along. You know, what's the point? A free dinner is one thing, but let's not learn this speech because it's not going to be in the script later on. In fact, you know, we change because particularly now in The Rise of Skywalker, JJ and Chris have finessed this and finessed this and finessed it and made it better and better and better as more, wow, we could do this now.
I was going to say, we're about 6 weeks out from the release of that film. Have you read the script? Have you seen it at any point?
You would be amazed. I think I will admit, this is breaking news. I get emails from JJ in the evening saying, could you just record this line on your cell phone, send it to me? So I have to turn the spare bedroom into a recording studio, and I knock these lines out because he's looking to just finesse some of the lines here and there. But I can imagine him as a schoolboy just doing his homework absolutely up to the wire, you know, and it makes it such a living thing.
He's winging it.
He's winging it, and you will see the magic very shortly.
Well, Anthony, if you do need to record any lines and you need a studio to pop into, the Empire Pod booth is available to you whenever you need it, sir.
That's a very nice offer, thank you. But actually, our spare bedroom is kind of a bit nicer.
not as grey, not as drab, not as depressing.
Grey is my favourite colour.
Oh, good.
But we've gone through that, now it's white.
We had a trick down for you, especially. Anthony Daniels, has been an absolute pleasure, and best luck with the book and with The Rise of Skywalker, and with whatever comes next for you.
Thank you, and I know you will be there.
I will indeed. Thank you very much.
I hope you will.
I will be. Thank you. Cheers. And that was Anthony Daniels, and that is it for this interview special. With the Empire Podcast on a short break until January 10th, again, fret not, there will be more specials coming your way over the next couple of weeks, including a mini-spoiler special for The Rise of Skywalker ahead of the main one in January, the Knives Out spoiler special, and our Review of the Year special as well. And if you want to get your hands on a copy of IMC3PO, I have now read it and I can thoroughly recommend it. And you can pick it up in hardback from all good online and offline bookstores. Offline bookstores, remember them? Huh. As well, of course, as the audiobook version read by one Anthony Daniels. And all just in time for Christmas as well. Makes an excellent stocking filler. Right, that's enough for me. I'm off to soak in a nice, relaxing oil bath. Thank the Maker. And thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.